We're going to talk to Bill Evans, banjo wizard Bill Evans, who performs and writes and creates and just does everything. Just finished a book, Bluegrass Banjo for Dummies. We're going to talk about that with Bill and all the great projects he's got on. And then we're going to patch in Sonny Osmond. We're going to cross the streams, which is always dangerous, but it works out fine. We've done it before. So we will patch in the chief, and we'll just have some nice conversation and some laughs. I'm sure you'll learn something. I know for a fact you're going to learn something you probably don't know about a collaborative effort between Bill Evans and Sonny Osmond. Please stay tuned. You're going to know all about this. I'm very excited about it. Please stay tuned. You're going to have a good time. I've had the opportunity to connect with one of my favorite banjo players and a good friend, Bill Evans. Are you there, Bill?
Hi, Steve. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. It's good to hear your voice again. You know, I follow you all the time. I know you're just doing all kinds of great stuff and with writing, and then Alan Mundy came out west for a while. I feel like I know everything you're doing, but I just haven't talked to you in so long. It's just kind of fun to get a chance to actually trade words for
a
while.
It's been quite a few years since you've had me on your show.
Yeah.
I know I'm always welcome, though. I'm not
anytime. You know that, anytime. Well, this is good. I've already told the audience that after we talk for a while, we'll plug the chief in, and then I just go away and drink coffee, and then whatever happens. We have a plan. I've told the people we have a plan, but, plans and Sonny sometimes don't always go hand in hand, but it's always a good time, so I'm looking forward to that, too.
And congratulations to you with everything that you've done with this show. You're like the Charlie Rose of bluegrass.
Oh no, well, that's very kind of you, Bill. Go ahead.
You go to unrealbluegrass.com and you look at the list of performers and people who are important in the Americana and bluegrass industry, and you have gotten to everybody at one point or other. You should write a book. You probably know more deep, dark secrets about everybody than just about anyone else
that's,
I might know.
That's very kind. Very kind. That is not planned, by the way, and I don't take compliments well. It's just my nature. But I will tell you this to go back at you. Thank you so much for you. When I first met you and Sonny and the whole gang at that first banjo camp, it was like a veil being lifted. I was introduced back into playing music again, which I hadn't played forever, and I got back into a couple bands locally, and I just started getting back into it. So this all flows back to that original connection, and Sonny's become a good friend of mine, which is just a blessing, and you have, and so many great people from that. So,
and you're one of the first, first bluegrass musicians I know to blaze new paths in regard to working with belly dancers, which I really give you credit for.
It was hard.
And so these listeners who have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm sure that there's pictorial evidence somewhere.
There is on Google.
The other Steve Martin and belly dancers, probably, who knows what will come up.
It was, you know what, Bill, and it was hard to do. It was hard to do because you had to just keep your inner metronome going and pay attention to nothing but what you were playing because they were distractions. But it worked out well. We had a blast.
Now, what do you play behind belly dancers?
Well, what we put together was...
Best Rocky Top?
No, what we play is we did like a medley back then of... one was Blackberry Blossom. I had to play everything at the same tempo, and it started with me, and I had to play the... So you'd have been proud of me. I had the time straight the whole time. So I would do... let's see if I can remember. Blackberry Blossom, there was some Foggy Mountain breakdown. Then there was a tune from a band member that we'd throw in there also. And they all had to be at the exact same meter because the dancers were dancing to a beat, and they also had percussionists on the side. So we just drove it for like 6 minutes at that same and switched in and out and did a medley, which worked out well. That's the formula.
One of my first professional gigs was when I was in college, and I worked for Clog. We played music behind a Clog dancing troupe at Busch Gardens in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Oh.
And that particular theme park is still patterned after the countries of Europe. Yeah, it's a theme park, but when you go in the main entrance, you're the first country you get to is England, and they have a replica of the Globe Theater, and you go in and see some. I actually never even saw what was in there, and of course the big attraction is Germany, where the beer hall is, of course, but you have to use some creative imagination to think where in a theme park that's patterned after the countries of Europe would they put a bluegrass band and cloggers. This was back in 1976. And so they created the country of New France. And the primary attraction of that was where the log flume ride was located.
Oh, sure.
That was our reason for existence. But actually, back, this is, 1976, and Jim Lauderdale was in one of the bands.
Nice.
And Gene Wooten, dobro player for the Osborne Brothers for many years, was in one of the bands. John Wallace, who later founded Accutab Publication, is now in Bluegrass Today. So they were, it was a good professional gig, and the musicians, I was in my second year of college at the University of Virginia back in 1976, and the musicians made twice as much as the costume characters, the people who got in those big costumes. And then I realized, well, this has got to be the career for me if I make more money than the costume characters.
That's so, right. And it's all started.
I never looked back.
No. Oh gosh, that's a great. I didn't of all the stories I've traded with you, I didn't know that one. So that's, let's see. You learn something every day on Unreal Bluegrass, something new.
Yeah.
And we wanted to talk about a lot of things, but I want to get to you. You are a writer. I think you're an excellent writer. Everything that you've written and instructional material and whatever, but you've now recently finished up a new book on teaching everybody how to play banjos again, Bluegrass Banjo for Dummies. I think I've got it correct, right?
That's right. And, it's a little bit confusing, but, of course, the For Dummies series, you can, go into a bookstore or go online. The yellow and black books are, you can get a For Dummies book about just about any subject, from, car mechanics to health-related issues to algebra. And in the last 8 or 9 years, they have gotten heavily into music. And so this is a brand-new book, not to be confused with my previous book, which is called Banjo for Dummies, and that is now in its second edition and has been translated into French again. So
new French or just French?
Recurring theme here for some reason. This is a totally new book from Banjo for Dummies. So Bluegrass for Dummies narrows the focus quite a bit. And, I was able to put in a lot of stuff in this book, not just for beginners, but for more advanced players. So there's pretty detailed chapters on melodic style, single string style, backup of all kinds, a section with, 60 licks. And then the really, really cool thing is that there is online audio, which you can download, but there are also videos online. So you buy the book, you find the internet URL in the foreword, and you can go online and see videos of me demonstrating the concepts from the book. Watch me rather than reading a book.
And
book is just out on Monday
and
available on my web store, which is BillEvansBanjo.com. I'll just get the commercials out of the way.
That's what I want you to do.
Yeah, and BillEvansBanjo.com. And if folks order directly from me, I will also put a CD in the mail. You get a choice of one of my CDs as well, and you can indicate that in the shipping instructions.
Nice.
And I'll get those out. And I'm trying to, in this world of Amazon, I'm trying to do an end run around Amazon and offer a special discount, because I can't, so many people don't know the way that Amazon works, but, one reason why their prices are so cheap is that my own publisher sells at a discount. They sell cheaper to Amazon than they sell to me.
Oh.
And I can't afford, most of us who are independent, creators of books and CDs, we can't compete with that unless we throw something else in. And whether, again, to kind of get out of the commercial mode of things, but talk about a truth here, is that, those of you, who are listening who want to support the bluegrass industry and the acoustic music industry, one of the best things that you can do, besides going to a show, going to a festival, is to buy a CD, or if your favorite performer has DVDs or books or whatever, buy directly from the artist.
Well, you're right.
Because it makes a huge, huge difference, even if you have to spend $4 more.
That's right.
That's the price of a latte here in the Bay Area of California where I live. It makes a big, big difference. It really makes a difference between the creator of the work receiving, a couple of bucks from the sale, or receiving nothing. Or something that's delayed for many, many, months or years.
Well, and we won't even get into the online services and you can have a 100 billion listens of one of your songs and for which you get pennies. I mean, so we do need to focus back to that on-site purchases, because that's where the real benefit is.
I hope that that will change. You know, I'm like everybody else. I use Amazon and I listen to Spotify myself, so I'm not totally blameless on all this. But if you've got a couple of famous performers that you really like, this is the way to support them. It really, really is. Or you can make your purchase through Elderly Instruments or County Sales. You know, one of the companies that has been in our bluegrass and music, acoustic music family for many years. And because those companies usually make really good deals with the artist in terms of, you know, distribution costs. And, you know, we all want them to stay in business as well.
Well, and if they can't buy directly from the websites you mentioned that are yours, gosh, if they go to a live concert, and that to me is still where all of you performers flourish and where the real connection is made with the audience. And so they get to see a live performance and they get to buy a CD if that's the route they want to take to avoid what we're talking about. I mean, that to me is the ultimate.
Yeah. And it's exactly true. We just can't get everywhere in the country at once, though.
No.
And in itself is getting harder and harder to do.
It is. And I was mentioning to you, you know, I do. I follow you on all the stuff, and of course, your website. You update people on your website, and social media has got to be part of the plan for bands of any kind today, especially the bands in the bluegrass field that don't have an automatic, media presence on TV and all that stuff. You need to be everywhere, and you do. You've always done that really well. But I know that Alan Mundy was out. You did some stuff with him. I know that you're playing with Dan Crary. I know that you do this regular thing called Bangers and Mash, which I would love to. I just can't get to the West Coast, but I know you're always busy touring and playing. You're constantly playing out.
Well, the future is now in terms of, where I want to just, I'm 58 years old. So you turn, we all get to this point in life. How old are you?
59.
Okay. Well, you probably had these thoughts, and you get to a point in your life where, not that you hope that, not that you're thinking that the end of your journey is going to happen imminently, but it's in your mind, right?
Right, oh yeah.
You start to think, well, you only have so much, who knows how long you have, but you want to take advantage of the time that you have, which is a gift, really. And I love to work, and I love to, teach people. I love to play in front of people when I get the opportunity. I love to work with different musicians. And, it has been really thrilling this year to work with folks like Alan Mundy and Dan Crary. Matter of fact, I'm playing with Dan Crary tonight, by the way, in the Sacramento area at a wonderful venue called the Palms Playhouse in Winters. And Steve Spurgeon is an important part of our trio as well.
Yes.
He's a great singer-songwriter who has written hits for Reba McEntire and Gene Watson. And he and Dan were in the band California for many years. Steve wrote that song Walk in the Irish Rain and many other tunes. And so the three of us are actually performing. And we're actually going to be playing in festivals in six states this year. About as far east as we're currently looking to get is the Winfield National Flat Picking Festival in September.
Okay. Well, see, and that's the one thing I like, and folks that are just tuning in, I'm talking to Bill Evans. You are always, you don't, this is not in a negative way that someone will get, if someone can be in a band and stay in that band forever, that's great. You know, if that happens, that's a rarity. If we talk about the Osmond Brothers, it's hard to do 40 or 50 years in a band. But what you do, Bill, is always, you have so many tastes, I think, in music, that you find different ways to get to do things. And now you're playing with Dan and Steve Spurgeon and stuff you did with Alan, which would be more banjo-driven tunes. And you always find different outlets for that creative part of your performance art.
I think part of that is related to, well, thank you. And
I mean that as a good thing, of course.
Yeah, it's an honor to play with all of these people as well. I mean, I'm playing with all of my favorites from the 70s.
These days.
I mean, another story that's happening is that this summer I'm going to be recording another record with the fiddler Fletcher Bright, the great fiddler Fletcher Bright from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Norman Blake is going to be playing on the album. I get to work with Norman Blake, which is just going to be a tremendously great thrill. Norman and Fletcher have known each other, literally since the 1950s because, Norman lives in the area around Chattanooga. But I think part of my own professional profile is that you have to adapt to the situation that you're given where you live. And, you know, for family reasons, you know, we love living in California. I'm not going to, you know, move away from California. But it required adapting in particular ways to the environment. And, you know, the bottom line is to make a full-time living as a performer anywhere in the country, you know, playing this music or related genres is difficult. But I would propose that it's even more difficult out here in the West because the distances are farther between venues, and the number of festivals are smaller. Even the number of venues are smaller. So it's really much more difficult for a group of musicians to get together and have a single band and have that be their main thing. And if you just think about it, what bands from the West Coast are doing that? I can think of just a couple, right, you know, off the top of my head. That's not a good thing. I mean, I think it affects the quality of the music. If you're with a group of people where that's the main thing that you're working on and you're really working hard, then, you know, and everybody is giving their all to that project, then, of course, the music is going to be better.
Oh, yeah, right.
But, you know, that doesn't happen to such a great extent out here. So most of the musicians that I know are doing a number of things at any one time. Some of them are even in a number of bands. And you just juggle your schedule and you make it work. It's a tremendous scene out here, having said that, though, with a lot of great musicians and a lot of places to play. And then we also get a chance to see everybody. You know, everybody will... I live near Berkeley, California,
where
the Great and Salvage Coffee House is located. And in a given year, everybody from, you know, Rhonda Vincent to the Steep Canyon Rangers, you know, will come through town. And so I do get a chance, even though I'm not close to the center of the music, I do get to hang out with everybody at least once a year when they pass through town.
Whatever, you know, why wouldn't you take a gig in California if you could get out that way? So that's kind of what you're saying. Now, I happen to really like that California sound. I've tried to, Herb Peterson has helped me try to define it. Other people, I know it, and I mean in the bluegrass era sound. But to me, it's very different, but I really like it. But I've never yet been able to, and I'm not good at defining things, and I don't like it anyway, but there's a definite feel to what comes from California in the bluegrass that you can almost recognize if you listen for it right away. Herb thought it was maybe the vocals, but that was a while ago we talked about. I still don't know what it is, but it's very different from Washington, D.C. It's very different from the New York sound, if you talk about regions that I've kind of explored on my own. But I recognize it right away. I really like what comes out of the West Coast.
Yeah, well, thanks. And, you know, I'm from Virginia, so
I don't
view myself as necessarily native Californian, and I don't actually do a lot of singing, at least on my recording.
Right.
So I can't really, you know, speak to that. What I witness here in California, though, is a tremendous interest, especially among young people, in traditional sounds. You know, I know a lot of young people who, you know, love the Stanley Brothers, love Jimmy Martin, love the Osborne Brothers, love Flatten Scruggs. But then we've got this other side of things with young groups like Front Country, who is playing Pearl Fest this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I love them.
And, of course, you know, David Grisman and all of the musicians that have worked in his band and spun off from his group, Daryl Anger and Mike Marshall, they've all, you know, taken the music in different directions, instrumentally speaking. So there's a tremendous amount of stuff happening, and a lot of it moves through California, but I would never say that, you know, we're the center of any of it.
No,
really.
But I think it's a recognizable sound. It's more of an energy, I guess, that I feel. This is just me, which no one's listening to the show to talk to me, but I think there's an energy. It's when you mention Grisman, of course, everybody can recognize what David does and the explorations he makes in music, but there's also... I think it maybe it's college-age players driven that there's an older style, but it's a new raw kind of more energetic style than what you would hear from. I mean, when you mention Front Country, I love that band, but their vocals are so much more modern, and even though they play older style music, but I don't know. Maybe it's college age. I don't know it. I just know that I can recognize. It's like the Supreme Court justice who said I can recognize pornography when I see it, but I can't define it.
I'm speaking in, you know, really broad generalizations here, but what we don't have out here is what I would very, very loosely and actually affectionately call IBMA music.
There you go.
Or serious bluegrass music. We don't have that contemporary, you know, commercial sound very much.
Yeah.
The groups do come out here and play, and they do have a following, but we don't, you know, the musicians who are out there playing and gigging, you know, tend not to, you know, we don't have bands, for instance, that sound much like the Lonesome River Band,
exactly.
Or
yeah,
sound much like, or sound much like Alison Krauss,
yes.
You know, that whole side of the spectrum, which, you know, is great banjo music. It's great to play banjo in a band like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish we did have more groups out there, you know, out here like that. I feel great about living here. You know, I did have to really adapt when our family made the decision to resettle out here, which has been back in 1997. I moved from Owensboro, Kentucky, you know, back here.
Sure.
And this was also the time where banjo camp started gaining speed.
Wow.
And I had been playing in Dry Branch Forest Club for 4 years and unable to teach at these banjo camps, but suddenly, you know, I was teaching at Banjo Camp North, and then the Midwest Banjo Camp came along, and that's a big part of what I do. I'll be teaching at 10 camps this year.
Well, I was going to get into that, Bill, yeah. Because we haven't even touched on that part of your career, and it's not just that you write instructional things. You are so good, because I've been to the ones that you've been, and I've sampled different teachers throughout the process, and they all have their own characteristics. But Bill Evans, if you want to learn from at a banjo camp setting, Bill, more than any other teacher I know, is able to figure out where you are comfortable as a player and help you move forward. And you have a good grasp of what the talent level is or the desire level is of the people that are in your camps. It just makes it all very easy and comfortable.
Well, thanks. We should draw attention to, you know, my main camp event, which every year is the camp that I do with Sonny Osborne.
Yes, please.
And our co-director is Cindy Sinclair, who everybody knows, who's been to Nash Camp before. She created Nash Camp, and there is a summer Nash Camp. It's a little bit confusing these days because Cindy directs a summer Nash Camp week that happens in the Nashville area in the summer, and that particular camp is 4 or 5 days long and is for all the instruments. And now there's a Fletcher Bright
Fiddle
Camp.
That's right.
Happening in the end of August, and then our banjo camp, and this will be our 13th or 14th year, and our dates are October 9 to 11. It's the Sonny Osborne Nash Camp Banjo Camp, and our teachers this year are going to be Alan Mundy and Janet Davis is going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
And Tony Trischka. We're just announcing Tony Trischka is going to be there, and Frank Neat is there for banjo setup. Sonny is there during the day to be the general spiritual leader. and I'm there, and we take all levels. I think that sometimes people will talk themselves out of an experience like this because they might say to themselves they're not good enough, you know. And I've had this conversation with so many folks. But the reason, you know, you go to a camp is so that you can learn more. And some camps will even accept very, very beginning students. Some of the camps, like the Midwest Camp, the Swanee Banjo Camp in Florida, the American Banjo Camp. And our camp, we don't accept rank real, real beginners, but we ask that you have at least a year of playing experience.
Yeah.
And then you take up to 4 workshop sessions a day with the teacher of your choice on a variety of topics. We have evening concerts and jamming, directed jamming, and we invite people from Nashville to come through. So you might be in the beginner's slow jam with Missy Raines and Roland White, for instance.
I'll just tell you this, it's an unbelievable experience. Everything Bill is describing is really understating the presence that you're there. And he mentioned a couple of great people show up and you play with these people. And I will tell you that when I came to the very first one, I had not played in a long time. I used to play a lot in college, and you go to law school and family and things. And so I wanted to get back into it, and I wasn't even sure what was going to happen when I got there. But the very first one, I was very comfortable there. I made a lot of friends that I'm still friends with today, not just you, but other people who were attendees. And it was the easiest landing for me back into, let's get back into picking banjo again. Absolutely was.
Oh, that's great to hear. I love to hear that. You know, if there's any difference in what we do with this camp than other camps is that it's smaller. So we'd like to think there's a little more camaraderie and individual tension. And you know, there's no question, absolutely no question, that we have the best food.
I was going to say, it's not peanut butter and crackers, folks. You're going to pick up a few pounds when you're there.
Yeah, it is not cafeteria food. The Nashville restaurant, the Mad Platter, comes in, and we could have anything from, you know, prime rib to just, you know, incredible desserts. And it, that that is a real, real highlight for all of us who like to eat three meals a day.
Yeah. it's a wonderful
experience.
Because
you end up eating about the equivalent of six meals a day.
Exactly.
There. But
exactly.
Then you're going to stay up all night. So
you need the energy. Yeah, sure. That's what we all tell ourselves. Oh, gosh. Well, you know what? I have stuff queued up to play while we're talking or waiting and whatnot, and we haven't covered half of anything, but, you know, there's a certain fellow down in Nashville that might be just about drumming his fingers. He doesn't have all the patience in the world, although he has ultimately the patience of the saints with friends of his, but why don't we do this? Can I play a tune that I often play in the program in between your music and then when I get into Osborne Brothers? I'll often play from Big Chief Sonny. I like it, and the fact that it's a nice transition in my, whether you're on or not, or whether Sonny's on it, it's a nice transition from your music into something that Sonny did. So if you want, I could plug that in the interim, folks. I can keep Bill on the line, and we can patch Sonny in, and we can go from there.
Yes, I would be honored, and I've got about a half an hour to talk before
okay.
I need to hit the road.
All right, that's good. All right, we'll do that.
You and Sonny to do your own good work at about 12:30 my time.
We'll do that, and then I will tell everyone that in the rest of the program I will pick up something from Dan Crary that you've mentioned to me, and I just won't have time to play it within the interview portion, but we'll play that by the end of the show. I always have 4.5 hours of music, and I cut it as I go through, so we have a lot packed in. So let me lose you for just a second. I'm going to turn some of my volumes down. Don't go anywhere, Bill, because I'll patch you in, Sonny. So, folks, you're going to hear Big Chief Sonny, which is a great tune that Bill Evans wrote, and I bet I know who it's about. But let's play that, and then when we come back, we'll have, if I do everything correct, we'll have Bill and Sonny Osborne, and we'll just have a lot of fun for half an hour. All right. Thanks, Bill. Hold on a second.
All right. Thank you.